From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Monster Full Throttle Rockstar Red Bull energy drinks. They will get you amped, super caffeinated, buzzed. But before you down another, the FDA is looking into whether those mega doses of caffeine and sugar and other exotic-sounding ingredients are linked to 5 deaths. And the mother is suing Monster Energy because her 14-year-old daughter died of heart arrhythmia after drinking large cans of Monster Energy. This hour, On Point, buzz in a bottle, in a can, the lifestyle, the marketing, the lawsuit. You can join the conversation. Are you downing energy drinks to get through exams, to stay up all night, to live hard, play hard? Is it any different from a thermos full of coffee? And why are energy drinks now all over? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We all know the marketing. It's all over the place. Here's a TV ad for 5-Hour Energy.
You know what 2:30 in the afternoon feels like, right? Sleepy? Groggy? Dying for a nap? What do? Run for the coffee? Grab a soda? But how long does that last before you're back for more? Try this instead. Take 1 5-hour energy, then see what the rest of your day feels like. Sure won't feel like 2:30 anymore.
And that's the calm version. Here's an animated Red Bull ad. A hunter stalked by his prey, a wild boar. The boar offers some advice.
Hey, animal killer.
Yeah?
Worn out already? Here, have a Red Bull.
Then what?
Then run faster. Red Bull gives you wings.
Red Bull gives you wings. It sort of did for Felix Baumgartner, the guy who, just this month broke the speed of sound when he took a Red Bull-sponsored 24-mile freefall, the highest ever freefall jump from the edge of space. He landed safely with more than 8 million people watching the YouTube live stream.
The Red Bull Stratos is definitely the realization of my dream. Being able to do that after all these years, put myself into dangerous situations, is the biggest thing that I can dream of.
Thank you, Red Bull, for the biggest thing that I can dream of. We'll hear in a minute about how this market has exploded, and from a doctor about the physical effects of a can or two or three. Joining me first today from New York is Barry Meyer, who's been covering the news and energy drinks for the New York Times. Barry Meyer, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
What's up with this FDA interest here? What's the lawsuit? Fill us in.
Well, it seems like the FDA's interest has just perked up since we broke the news of these 5 deaths. Those records have been lying around inside the FDA since 2009. The mother of the 14-year-old girl in Maryland who died got them under the Freedom of Information Act. We got them from her. But, the FDA was not publicizing them. Red Bull claims that, Monster Beverage claims that it was unaware of 4 of these 5 incidents. So, I guess one of the fundamental questions here is what's going on? Why weren't these records out in the public domain? And why wasn't Monster Beverage, which sells, tens of millions of dollars worth of these drinks every month or so, aware of these deaths also?
I mean, just to be fair and clear, these are simply incident reports. There are not proven links between the drink and the deaths. But
absolutely right, Tom. But the fact of the matter is that, whether they turn out to be related or not related, one would think that the folks responsible for regulating these beverages or manufacturing these beverages would be tracking down that information and would want to be aware even of allegations of possible adverse events linked to their products.
What's the case in the lawsuit, Barry? What happened?
Basically, in December of last year, a 14-year-old Maryland girl drank 2 24-ounce cans of Red Bull over a 24-hour period in the late afternoon or early evening on 2 consecutive days. Each of these cans contains about 240 milligrams of caffeine. That's about 2.5 cups of coffee's worth of caffeine. And shortly after drinking the second can on the second day, she developed a fatal heart arrhythmia and died. We don't know whether the drink caused it or didn't cause it. The medical examiner report and the autopsy report, however, does state that she developed this arrhythmia apparently as a result of caffeine toxicity.
Did she have a heart condition before any of this?
She had a condition known as mitral valve regurgitation, which is sort of, you know, you get some of the blood flowing backwards when your heart is pumping. But her lawyer says that she was not told to either restrict her physical activity because of this condition or restrict her caffeine intake as a result of this condition.
2.5 cups of coffee worth of caffeine in a can. I mean, that doesn't sound like so very much. Plenty of people in the course of a day drink 2.5 cups of coffee, I guess.
You're absolutely right about that. I drink probably far more than that in a given day, and most healthy adults drink far more than that in a given day. What we don't know is the effect of that amount or greater amounts or even lesser amounts on young people or on those who have underlying heart conditions like this teenager had.
And, of course, these are heavily marketed to young people. I mean, I do read here that there are now the tenfold increase in consumption of these between 05 and 09, and now more than 13,000 emergency room visits annually after energy drink consumption. That sounds like a bigger than coffee drinking number.
Well, yes, and a lot of these, about half of those emergency room visits are related to the mixing of alcohol with energy drinks, because apparently what research is suggesting is that you mix caffeine and alcohol, and that suppresses your awareness of how drunk you're getting, so you just keep on drinking. The other half are reactions, apparently, to over-caffeination. So it's everything from heart palpitations to jitters, to, you know, anxiety episodes. And so you look at these small number of reports of deaths and adverse events that the FDA is getting, and you look at the large number of emergency room visits that are happening, and something's not jiving in our understanding of how these drinks or overconsumption of these drinks are affecting people.
Monster Energy says, look, this is not related to our drink. They say that, you know, there's not a problem here. What about the FDA? What are they really? Are they investigating this? Are they just paying attention? What exactly is going on?
They say they're investigating, but, you know, I don't work for the FDA. They haven't issued any reports of investigations on these particular episodes. They say that it's the responsibility of manufacturers to track down these incidents and investigate them. And Red Bull is saying, well, we don't know about them. So if Red Bull is saying...
You mean Monster Energy.
Monster is saying we don't know about them. And at the same time saying, well, we're not aware of any bad news about our drinks. You know, there's sort of a dissonance here that I find difficult to reconcile, both on the part of Monster Beverage and on the part of the FDA.
Barry Meyer with the New York Times, thank you so much for your reporting and for being with us today, Barry.
I greatly appreciate your having me on.
Here's just another example of kind of marketing. Lots of extreme sports and so on. Tied up in the bundle, the energy drink world, is a Red Bull video. A mountain biker describing what it's like to be in the annual Red Bull Rampage bike race. It was October this year in Utah.
Rampage has kind of taken myself into this, you know, it's taken myself out of this comfort zone, and I think that's why I love it, you know, it's cool to come here and feel so kind of, like, it almost makes you feel like a beginner, some of this stuff, you know, it scares you so much, it makes you feel so nervous about riding again, and this place is pretty unforgiving.
Red Bull Rampage, a little Red Bull, and what's the ad say? Red Bull gives you wings. Jeffrey Kleinman joins us right now from Watertown, Massachusetts. He is editor-in-chief of BevNet.com, which covers the beverage industry, website, magazine. Jeffrey, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. I'm reading here $10 to $12 billion of energy drink sales per year in this country now. How big a deal is this? Is this important in the beverage industry business-wise?
It's one of the few areas in the beverage industry that's shown year-over-year positive growth since they came on the market. And as the industry has matured, as it's crossed $3 to $5 billion, it's continued to grow at a very strong rate at a time when other beverage categories like sodas, teas, waters, sports drinks have all maintained fairly flat trajectories.
You've called this a lightning bolt piece of the beverage industry, a rocket ride. Who's in it? Are the big beverage companies involved?
Well, that's one of the more interesting parts, Tom. The first company to really sort of harness it was Red Bull, which, as we know, is an independent company.
Okay.
The two largest companies beyond Red Bull are Monster and Rockstar. They're both well over billion-dollar companies, and neither of them is owned by Coke or Pepsi. There's been talk that they might be acquisition targets, but they're getting too big to be bought by those companies.
Who distributes Monster?
So the distribution goes through the large beverage companies. Monster's distributed by Coke and also by Anheuser-Busch. Rockstar's distributed by PepsiCo.
And overall sales, 10 to 12 billion. Is that a big chunk of the beverage market?
It's a growing chunk. I think we pegged the entire U.S. beverage market at about 150 billion.
Okay.
So it's not quite a tenth, but by 2016 it should be.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Music there from a video off the Monster Energy Off-Road Team. You can find it online. It's the action-packed lifestyle marketed around caffeine-packed energy drinks. They're now under scrutiny as a death toll is alleged or reported out there. The FDA is investigating. No proven link. No proven link here. An amped-up lifestyle, though, is being heavily promoted here, especially to the young. And people are looking at this as a kind of cultural move and saying, what's going on culturally? What's going on chemically in the realm of energy drinks? We'll hear in just a moment from a pediatric cardiologist who's paying attention. But right now, Jeffrey Kleinman is with us from BevNet.com. They write a lot about the whole world of the beverage business, where this has been the sector, energy drink sector, has been a big star. Let's get a call here. Dan's calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Dan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a strange anecdote. I'm in a rock band called Jim's Big Ego, and oftentimes when we come back from gigs from far away, we have to stay awake while we're driving.
Sure.
And, generally we're coffee enthusiasts. And it was very late one night coming back from Philly about a year ago. We didn't have access to decent coffee, and we came upon a gas station that had some five-hour energy drinks.
Sure, they're everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Jim, my lead singer, grabbed two of them because we were really scraping it to try to get back to Boston. Okay. And drank two of them. And after about 15 or 20 minutes, I turned to him, and I was shocked. He had changed color, literally, from his normal white face to bright orange. And I got really scared. I said, yeah. You got to pull over. We have to find out what's going on. And we called. We couldn't reach the company that made the drink. And then I called a friend who's a doctor, and he said, yeah, you've overdosed on one of the ingredients in the drink. It's probably not, in any way dangerous to your life, but you may end up being orange for the better part of the day, and you should drink a lot of water, and definitely don't drink any more of that drink.
So, Dan, what did you and your rock band, Jim's Big Ego, and your lead singer, what did you take away from that night on the road and two pops of energy drink?
We don't drink that stuff anymore. I mean, I would much rather have a thermos full of coffee from the day before than I would, pummel ourselves with chemicals. It's hard enough to eat and drink well when you're on the road, but, grabbing a can full of chemicals that are kind of an unknown concoction seems really dubious.
A lot of concoctions out there, no question about that. Dan, I really appreciate your call. Let me hold that one and get one more from Buffalo, New York. Connor, thanks for calling. Connor, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I drink these things all the time, and it says pretty clearly on the back exactly what's in it. And right below that is a warning label that says not recommended for children, pregnant women, or people sensitive to caffeine.
Yeah.
So I would expect that someone who has a medical condition that might be affected by that would take the time to read the back of the can, take it up with their doctor, and then decide for themselves whether or not it's appropriate.
Yeah.
It really comes down to personal responsibility as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So read the can, don't drink too much, and think about your own conditions before you get into it. Connor, I appreciate your call as well. Jeffrey Kleinman with BevNet.com. What about the ingredients here in the list? Are they all listed? Are they required all to be listed? Do we all know what's in them or not?
Well, we know what's in them. There's something of a cloud that surrounds the energy, what they call the energy blend. Now, the main thing to remember about an energy drink is that it's a big wad of caffeine that is often powered home by a big hit of sugar. You know, when the lead singer of Jim's Big Ego drank those 2 5-hour energies and turned orange,
yeah.
Which would be a great thing to pull off on stage. it sounds to me from what I've read, he probably had too many B vitamins. Anyone who's read about B vitamins knows that it's basically you sort of top out on your Bs and then you excrete them once you've sort of hit the 100% level.
Right.
It's hard for your body to do anything with them. But the issue of what's in them is one that continues to perplex a lot of people who follow the industry in terms of if you're getting hassled and you're a mature business, why aren't you pushing towards more disclosure?
But I thought you said there was disclosure, that we do know what's in them.
Well, you know what's in them, but in terms of exact proportions and numbers, it's allowed to be sort of grouped as a large milligram amount.
Got it.
They tend to indicate how much caffeine might be in it, but even I am not sure at this point if that caffeine counts the caffeine that's present in the guarana or the yerba mate, both of which are caffeine-containing compounds that are considered part of this energy blend.
When you think about the beverage industry and how they look at this, you know, because they're looking to grow, of course, every business is. Do they hope to sort of create a new baseline for how people expect to feel, how amped up people expect to feel in the course of a day? I mean, you heard the 5-hour energy ad there, a little slump at 2 o'clock. Don't accept that. Down one of these. Is there a, you know, can you establish a new normal that requires, well, I mean, coffee's been out there for a long time now, but maybe coffee plus to sustain?
Well, there are two things going on here, Tom. One is that energy drinks, like coffee, are popular because they work. You wake up if you drink this stuff. Yeah, there's a law of diminishing returns, but there's a lot of caffeine in these products. And caffeine, among all functional products, you know, what we call functional foods, caffeine works, right? You try and put a kid to bed after he's had chocolate.
Yeah, forget about it. Jeffrey Kleinman, stand by. I want to bring a medical voice into this conversation, if I may. Dr. Steven Lipschultz joins us right now from Tarragona, Spain. He's a pediatric cardiologist, published the paper Health Effects of Energy Drinks on Children, Adolescents, and Young Adults in the American Academy of Pediatrics journal Pediatrics. He's a professor of pediatrics at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Dr. Lipschultz, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So, I mean, we're getting response to this conversation on a line. And for example, Dr. Lipschultz, Shag says, has anyone overdosed if they stick to the recommendations on the can about daily consumption? Says, if you drink 4 or 5 of these in a day, it's all on you. And here's another. Jeffrey says, one girl with a heart condition dies, and now there'll be a warning label on energy drinks. Welcome to America. Is this, you know, much ado about not too much, or is there some reason for concern here, Dr. Lipschultz?
Well, we had concerns a number of years ago when we started having children come into a children's hospital in South Florida. And when we looked into it, that's what prompted us to really do a review of the literature in terms of energy drinks and health consequences in children, teenagers, and young adults. And in fact, we found that they're consumed by 30 to 50% of adolescents and young adults. And in addition to containing, in some cases, high and unregulated amounts of caffeine, they have been reported in association with serious adverse effects, especially in children, adolescents, and young adults with seizures, with diabetes, with cardiac abnormalities, or mood and behavioral disorders, or those taking certain medicines. In fact, what we found that of more than 5,000 U.S. caffeine overdoses reported in 2007, 46% occurred in those younger than 19 years. And what we found was wasn't just the United States. Certain countries such as Germany, New Zealand, Ireland, and others have been tracking in their poison control systems energy drinks for a number of years. And several countries and states have debated or restricted energy drink sales and advertising based on some of the facts that energy drinks were not felt to have therapeutic benefits and many ingredients were understudied and not regulated and as effectively as they could. The reason why this then became important to us is we were having children come in with these issues. And after our paper went through peer review and came out in the official journal, the American Academy of Pediatrics, that organization, which is the largest organization of pediatricians in the United States, did their own independent, careful review and published last year that caffeine and other stimulants contained in energy drinks have no place in the diet of children and adolescents. And again, we're all seeing the same thing in the medical literature and elsewhere in the patients we care for.
Doctor, let me ask you, why would young people be more vulnerable to adverse effects? Is it just because they weigh less, they have less body mass, so the impact of a fixed amount of caffeine or these ingredients is greater on them, or is it something else?
Well, it first of all, the effects in some ways seem to be reported to poison control centers in ways that suggest that caffeine is probably one of the major contributing factors. But as was pointed out earlier in your show, there can be a variety of different ingredients that may have different properties on the body. And they may affect certain children in ways that may be greater and may be unpredictable. You're bringing up one issue about just the size of the body. And yes, if you have a 70-pound teenage girl taking two large energy drinks, the amount per size of body may be very different than a 240-pound football player of the same age. And in fact, in children, we dose medicines based on weight. And so there, you know, it may be relative issue that way. As I pointed out earlier, when we reviewed the literature, we found, for example, that certain children with diabetes wound up in intensive care units, not really as aware of the high sugar loads. We found children with seizure disorders hospitalized because the stimulant properties were not necessarily appreciated. We found that children, teenagers, and young adults with underlying heart diseases, where knowing they had these heart diseases, you would suggest that they wouldn't take stimulants because it would increase the risk of a dangerous or life-threatening heart arrhythmia, dangerous heart rhythm, had just these type of reactions. And in fact, many children with that have heart disease are not even aware of it.
You got to be careful how it gets stacked up as well. I mean, you tell us here that 10% of young Americans are now diagnosed with ADHD. ADHD medicine itself is typically a stimulant. You put the energy drink on top of that, and you've got a double dose right away.
Well, you're right. I mean, with 10% of children having ADHD, with stimulants being a leading type of medical therapy, stimulants to improve concentration is one thing, but stimulants on stimulants, exactly as you say, may be not something that's going to increase their concentration. And so for certain higher risk groups of children, some of whom are known, some of whom are not, it may pose a very dangerous situation. And again, we cannot identify, because we haven't screened all children, for who's at higher risk.
Dr. Lipschultz, Jeffrey, please stand by. Craig in West Des Moines, Iowa is calling. Craig, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Tom. I just want to say, specifically regarding five-hour energy, I'll have one of those when I have to make a two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour drive.
Yeah.
At night, and it just, there's no buzz. It's one cup of caffeine equivalent, one cup of coffee's worth of caffeine. Now, it does have about 8,000%, I think it says on the label, of the B vitamin complex and folic acid, but it's not like, boom, it gives me a buzz and or anything. It's just
gets you home safe.
You notice that you're staying awake, you notice that you're alert, and you're not feeling like, gosh, I'm going to start getting drowsy at the wheel.
Yeah.
Now, I realize our country is not too sharp when it comes to food and beverage literacy and common sense, but I can't imagine any parent allowing their kids to drink this stuff on even a regular basis, let alone one time, when it's got ingredients that...
Yeah, but of course it's not restricted. I mean, it's just down at the gas station or the corner of the convenience store, and you can get it anywhere. What about all that B vitamin? Does it work for you, Craig?
Well, it does, man, and I've done a little research. I understand there may be some gastrointestinal issues for some people if they ingest too much B vitamin. I sure as heck don't drink these things every day. I can't imagine anyone drinking them anytime they feel a little drowsy, but once in a while, when you know you've got to stay awake,
yep,
you know you've got to have command of your faculties, I don't think they're harmful at all.
It's better than being in the ditch. Dr. Lipschultz, what about that big dose of B vitamins? Is that all right?
Well, again, the content may vary from product to product. What initially caught our attention in South Florida about 5 years ago, we had a teacher who put larger doses of B vitamins and other vitamins into an energy drink that he produced, and four members of his class needed to come to the hospital with tingling, with other sensations, and needed medical therapy. And so, again, for certain people, it may be more tolerable. For others, it may actually cause a problem. That was a case where one energy drink resulted in four children needing hospital care.
Dr. Lipschultz, stand by there, please. Jeffrey Kleiman, I know we have to let you go in a second here, but before you go, any chance that the beverage companies will take their foot off the accelerator here? I mean, this is good business, right?
It is good business. And, not to sound too much like a person who's sort of backing the industry, but I think that the beverage industry itself has shown a certain amount of responsiveness to public health concerns. If you look at Coke and Pepsi removing carbonated soft drinks from schools, if you look at them starting to list calorie counts on cans.
Mm-hmm. They're listening. They're paying attention. Jeffrey Clement, I know we have to let you go. With BevNet.com, editor-in-chief there, thanks so much for being with us. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking today at caffeine-packed energy drinks under scrutiny as a death toll is alleged. The FDA pays attention, and an amped-up lifestyle is heavily promoted, especially to the young in this country these days. Energy drinks, a little of Monster Energy music behind us right there. Monster Energy, subject of a lawsuit. Somebody said Red Bull earlier. It was Monster Energy from the parents of a girl with a pre-existing heart condition, but who died after a couple within 24 hours. The FDA now says what the Freedom of Information Act has brought out 5 cases of deaths that are on their books, and they're paying attention as well. But there's no proven link here, but just questions people wondering about what's going on with energy drinks, our drinking habits when it comes to energy drinks, I guess, our culture, and why we're turning in this direction. Dr. Stephen Lipschultz is with us. He is professor of pediatrics at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Wrote a big paper published in the journal Pediatrics about effects on children, adolescents, and young adults. With us right now from New York is Katie Baker. She's a staff writer for Jezebel. Hi, Katie. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Tell us about how energy drinks have been in your world in recent years, Katie. I mean, what, you're 20, 25 years old. It seems like that age group is kind of soaked in marketing for these.
Yeah, I personally never enjoyed the taste of energy drinks. I don't really like the sugary taste, but, you know, I was surrounded by them all throughout college. I don't think there was a particular brand, but I think, you know, it's the feeling and the rush, and college kids have a lot to do. They have class, they have work, they have social obligations, and I think it's seen as this really accessible, legal, kind of relatively healthy alternative to, you know, prescription pills or other drugs to kind of get everything done. And I don't think that most people think of energy drinks. I think probably in part because they're so accessible and they're marketed, you know, that you can find them anywhere. And
sure.
So no one I know for sure would ever feel concerned about drinking an energy drink.
And they are very well represented, shall we say, on college campuses these days, right?
Yeah, well, I remember my sophomore year of college, my roommate had dozens, literally dozens of Monster cans in our fridge, clogging up our whole fridge because her boyfriend was one of those brand ambassadors that, you know, they get college kids to be these brand ambassadors and just pass out free cans. And I mean, I always thought they were pretty disgusting, but they were, you know, if I ever wanted an energy drink, it was definitely very easy for me to get one.
You've said you've got friends who look at energy drinks as a kind of lesser evil, a bigger rush than coffee, but not the kind of Adderall crash and all that a lot of students know very well these days.
Yeah, I think it's seen, you know, I have friends who, it's interesting, you know, friends who maybe are vegetarians or kind of care about what they put in their body, and I'll see them chugging a 5-hour energy or a rock star, and, you know, I'd say, how are you drinking that? And they go, well, it's not that bad. It's just the same as coffee. And it's seen, you know, when you have so much pressure to get things done, you know, you need to do something if you, you know, want to succeed in school or at work and also be able to go out socially. I think a lot of the marketing, too, is I think these energy drinks pair very well with alcohol. I think it's an easy way for people to stay up. It's a rush. And I think especially with younger teenagers, you know, it's legal. They can go buy one. People love any accessible disconnect from reality, and you can definitely get a rash from drinking these, especially if you're younger and you don't drink. And they also pair so well with alcohol that, you know, it's a pre-party tactic, I think, for a lot of young people.
Pre-party tactic, that hit of the energy drink. Katie Baker, stand by. Lox is calling from Farmington, Connecticut. Lox, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First of all, let me say my heart goes out to the parents of the little girl. But the whole thing is emblematic of complete lack of, as a society, common sense and intellectual honesty. I mean, I'm a physician, and we were not designed to go 24/7 at full throttle. And people were living fine before Red Bull and Monster Drink and whatever else came on board. There is no large discussion in terms of why it is that we seem like we have to accomplish everything now. And people said about social obligations. I never thought of anything that's social as being an obligation. I mean, yes, you have to be nice to people, but if you're tired, you don't have to show up to a party. And if you're tired, you pull over and you sleep. I mean, these are things we inflict on ourselves. And yes, the companies are going to make profit because they see an opportunity, but we give them the opportunity.
You know, we've got a listener here, Lox, on Twitter, who writes, it seems like our society can't get enough sleep, pills, or energy, drinks. Does that say something about our lifestyle, this listener asks? What do you
Absolutely.
Say?
Absolutely. I mean, We want to do everything now when we want to do it. So we take the energy drink or whatever else it is, or a cups of coffee, and try and do it. And then we are sleep deprived, and then we're sleepy and can't sleep. And then we go seek a pill to sleep. And then we're drowsy the next morning. And then we have something that's going to help us with our attention and our ADHD. It's just bizarre.
Up we go, down we go. Lox, I appreciate your call. Katie, what do you think of that? If you get this stuff is all over college campuses, lots of people using it when they're driving on the road, but do you ever see your friends worrying that they sort of, look, coffee can be the same thing. You get trapped on a kind of energy crash treadmill.
Definitely. I think I have more than a few friends who have actually told me that they've blacked out from drinking 5-hour energy while driving. They didn't know why, but their vision got weird. They hallucinated. More than a few friends, but it was always told to me in this way that, the craziest thing happened to me. I can't believe this. Wow. But, it didn't really stop them from drinking it because, again, I think, college kids are surrounded by so many stimulants and so many choices for stimulants that, it's just kind of seen as the alternative would be not getting what you need to get done or not going out. And just like the caller said, of course you don't have to go to a party, but I think a lot of young people have a fear of missing out, on social situations. And it's a way to kind of gear themselves up for whatever they have to do.
To be there and to be on. Odessa, Texas, Gary is calling. Hi, Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love the show.
Thanks.
I kind of wanted to touch on something that one of your earlier callers had said. I think that one of the reasons we're getting this way is the generations that are upcoming have the sense of instant gratification, and they want to get that instant, take away from reality, as your other caller was putting. And the fact that they are so easily accessible is definitely something that we need to monitor. But one thing that I wanted to touch on was, when does the personal responsibility of the mother come into play? I know that they are available at 7-Elevens and whatnot, and anybody can buy them. But I heard from I think it was a New York Times editor that was calling her at the very beginning of the show that she had a previous condition. So if they were aware of this previous condition, had she not talked to her daughter about what she should and should not do and the intake of caffeine and chemicals and such like that?
Yeah,
me being in the Permian Basin, Odessa, obviously the oil field, the energy drinks and the 5 hours, I mean, they're flying off the shelves here. Everybody's drinking them because they're working 24-hour shifts.
There's a boom, and people are all over it, and they're working using these to keep up.
They are. And that being said, it's definitely something that I think the monster companies have taken enough responsibility to put the ingredients and things listed on the cans of these things. I think that the personal responsibility has to come into play.
Gary, let us pick it up, and I'm glad for your call from Odessa. Dr. Lipschultz in Tarragona, Spain. What about responsibility here and where it lies? You hear our caller says, let's have some personal responsibility. Let's have the girl's parents responsible if she's got a heart condition for keeping her away from this stuff.
I think that's part of where research and data should drive policy. And the goal should not be to say that children and teens are not large consumers of energy drinks or just having some energy drink containers labeled with a warning saying they may not be safe for children or those sensitive. But at the same time, although the labeling's voluntary, it's contrary to marketing strategies aimed at youth. And so part of the issue is the reality is between 2005 and 2009, emergency room visits for energy drinks in parts of the United States increased 14-fold. That's in the medical literature. And who's at higher risk? Here we're focusing on people who intentionally make a decision to consume energy drinks. In fact, we find, in contrast to what the industry says, the probably some of the larger segments of people that come in with adverse and toxic events are those that have unintentional exposures, as in very young children, where these are unintentionally consumed. And I think that the picture is not as straightforward as the data is out there in clear ways, so parents and children and teenagers and other providers can counsel in terms of who's at risk and who's not at risk.
You know, I wanted to ask you about this little bit of a television ad, if I could, Doctor, that suggests, and this is from 5-Hour Energy, that suggests a kind of medical endorsement. Let's listen.
We asked over 3,000 doctors to review 5-Hour Energy, and what they said is amazing. Over 73% who reviewed 5-Hour Energy said they would recommend a low-calorie energy supplement to their healthy patients who use energy supplements.
Okay, that's kind of amazing in itself. What they said is amazing, but all they said was use low energy, a low-calorie if you drink it. But it sounds kind of like an endorsement, doesn't it?
Well, in the late 1950s, there were many Chesterfield cigarette ads by physicians endorsing Chesterfield. So, you know, I think, again, once you have the data, you let your data drive your endorsements and your policy decisions. And right now, we need more data. One of the issues when you're dealing with supplements such as energy drinks is there's no post-marketing surveillance such as with prescription medicines. And the number of people that are truly experiencing issues and who's at high risk is very hard to understand.
Let's go to Kurt in Huntsville, Alabama. Kurt, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment just generally on the reporting. You know, I'll use an analogy. I bet if we did a study and we looked at how many people died within 24 hours of eating an apple, the number would be much higher than 5. And yet we don't go after apples. I'm not saying these drinks aren't associated or in some way, shape, have some association with these deaths. But the way it's been reported makes it sound very clearly like this is an unusual occurrence, that somebody would ingest something and within the next day die. It's not unusual. It's unusual that we have this. So I'm just saying that the way we often report science data is imprecise, and it would be nice to be a little bit more, to give an example of why this would be an unusual occurrence.
Yeah, Kurt, I take your point, and we've been clear to say, as the FDA did, that there's no proven link here. But what about those 13,000 emergency room visits? Those aren't from eating apples.
No, and like I said, but all of this is associated with data. There's no evidence that they're linked. And all I'm saying is precisely get the public. I do science for a living, so I see this. I see it from that perspective.
Yeah, no, it's a very fair observation, and you know, I we've said any number of times, no proven link here, but it's in the public mind at the moment, so we're thinking about it, trying to see what is going on here. I appreciate your note of caution there, Kurt. One more right here, Dimitri in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Dimitri, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Love the show.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say that first. Now, I'm listening into this, and I'm an older brother. I'm 22. I'm in college, and, you know, I'm a chemist, too, so I look at the labels of things, and I do these thoughts. But, you know, about the older brother part, I have a sister who's 18 now, and I've seen her from when she was 14, starting high school, up until now, and she has caffeine all the time, whether it be from coffee or from energy drinks. And I'm also a pharmacy technician, and I see all these parents bringing in their kids getting Adderall prescriptions and all that. You know, where's the direction on this? You know, why aren't these kids getting these direction from their parents? And if they are getting direction, why is it towards this? Because, you know, I mean, I went through high school. I didn't use energy drinks. I'll admit, now that I'm in college, you know, every now and again when I have a test, I need to stay up late, I'll use that supplement because I know, you know, once in a while is not a terrible thing.
Dimitri, we've got it. And your concern for the sister, the younger sister, who's had a lot since she was 14, and that sort of question hanging there, why? Let me get one more, if I may. Lori in Norwell, Massachusetts. Lori, you're on.
Hi. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, basically, in February of this year, my sister-in-law, who was 50 years old, she was very fit. She was tall, thin, ran, didn't do drugs, didn't smoke, didn't even drink alcohol, but she was in a high-pressure job. So she would be taking these 5-Hour Energy drinks and the Red Bull and whatnot. Well, unfortunately, what happened is that she passed away this year. Now, I am not saying in any way, shape, or form that it had anything to do with it. I'm just saying with the fact of all of the times that she had taken this over the past couple of years.
How did she die, Lori? What happened? How'd she die?
She died. She had a major mild cardiac infarction. She had a heart attack.
Heart attack.
And and it was right after she had taken one of these. Now, a lot of people have stressed me, why don't you have this taken look? Why don't you have somebody look at this a little bit more in, you know, invasively? But the thing is that she had no history of a heart attack. Nobody in her family had any heart condition.
Yeah, Lori, our time is so short. Let me take it to Dr. Lipschultz. Doctor, we've just got a minute. And again here, we don't want to draw a connection where we don't know that there is one, and we don't. Here's clearly in a story like that, but you hear Lori's concern. Reasonable concern, or as a doctor, you're thinking, wow, you know, this could be a million things?
Well, again, I think that one of my colleagues once said that the plural of a case report is not data. And it goes along with what your caller from Texas said earlier. And when we really try to understand how we can help our population and our country in terms of who's at risk, who's not, what are the real associations, being able to track for the whole country, who are those that are getting the toxicities, who are calling into our national poison control system, really seeing what the associations are, really determining whether they're linked to, in fact, consumption of these products as opposed to other factors. This is part of what is starting to happen now in the United States and needs to continue, and I think you're all bringing up the appropriate caution, but yet bringing up enough safety signals that these are things that really need to be explored further.
Well, Dr. Lipschultz, Stephen Lipschultz, the University of Miami, Miller School of Medicine, we want to be fair. We want to be eyes wide open. We appreciate your being with us today. And Katie Baker with Jezebel in New York. Katie, thanks so much. Listeners, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.